Now all we need to do is record something that doesn't suck. To start recording at like 7 a.m. So we're a little less cynical.
Funny is usually harder.
Funny's way harder. Video works. Audio works.
It's a $3,500 chair.
Woo!
Hello, and you are listening to the Think Big and Code Small podcast. My name is Dan Horton, and I am joined with my friend and co-host, Chris Westerhold.
In today's episode, we're tackling an often overused word, platform or platforms, and more specifically, the concept of adapting a platform mindset. We'll discuss what this mindset entails, how it can benefit you and your teams, and the practical steps it takes for building one. It's going to be a good show. Let's get at it.
This episode is sponsored by CodeCrafters.
We've been having a fun week. How are you doing this week now? You're feeling better, right?
It's been, these last two or three weeks have been just absolute awful. I've had this sickness that I've been half sick. Then there's days I'll feel a little bit better. And then nope, worse. And it was that way for like a week and a half. And then I end up with a severe double ear infection. And then I'm all jacked up on steroids and just, it's been absolutely rough, but I finally got a good night's sleep.
You couldn't wear your headphones, right? Like you had that ringing in your ear, which is terrible. Always fun.
Terrible. But I feel like I'm back. Today's the first day where I feel like I might be able to have an intelligent conversation, but we're going to find out. How about you, man? How you been?
I've been good.
But you've been doing quite a bit of travel though, too.
Yeah, the travel's been really cool. Got to go down to Atlanta and drive some race cars.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun.
Not going to lie, I'm pretty jealous.
That was a cool experience. Something, I don't think it was that expensive. It's a couple $100 for a couple laps for each of the cars, depending what you do. And but you get to drive Ferraris, Lamborghini, Porsche. The Audi R8 was there. The Corvette Z, if you like the Corvette. It was a nice nice variation of vehicles that you could pick and choose, you know, what you want to ride. And they took you around in the pace car first, so you could learn to track in the pace car. And those guys have done the track so many times, you know, they're enjoying themselves. Let's just say, you know, they know how to drive it with their eyes closed. And I get in and he goes, "You like music?" And he flares up the radio and then he's flying down his track. And he's like, "Okay, this is what it feels like," you know, and off he goes.
It's incredible. It's incredible how good those guys are. And, you know, even at a single lap pace and being able to do that, but then you throw other cars in there. It's incredible how good those guys are at being able to process information and not wreck, I don't know, $1 million car or God knows what.
Oh yeah. Well, you had to sign that, you know, if you broke it, you bought it. Like you had to sign a waiver for the cars. So, you know, Extreme Experience was the company that's doing this. They actually travel around different places in the United States and they rent tracks. Everyone's a 1099. It's they all work for the companies, coaches and logistics and everything else. So really, really, really great setup. But on the paperwork, there's a $100 cleaning fee. Mm. So if you get sick driving the car, it's $100. If you drive into the grass, it's like $200 because they have to now check the car to make sure you didn't break anything. And then it kept going up from there, you know? And so it was to make you not drive like an idiot, but drive fast. Go drive fast, be smart. Don't do something stupid. And they put a coach next to you. So while you're driving, your coach is talking to you and he's telling you where you turn, when to slow down, when to speed up. So you really get the best experience you can on the track. It was really, really cool.
That is pretty awesome. Not gonna lie, I'm super jealous. Maybe we'll have a chance to do that again.
Oh yeah, I'm hoping. I was thinking about it. I started asking everybody I know. Is we get a big group of people together and go do a friends event, right? And we go rent out a track for half a day. And you know, I like the word we went through the other day, and we keep coming back and forth. You and I have been trying to record this thing for like, I feel like 3 weeks, but I think it's been 3 days. And the word that we've been coming across is platform. It's such an overused word.
Very much so. And it is something that there's the concept from a handful of years ago that every modern tool is a platform. There was this kind of mantra of like, yes, every new thing has to be a platform, because you know, if you think about, you know, platforms connecting producers and consumers, well, in that model, there's an unlimited number of producers and consumers potentially, and the platform is just facilitating back and forth. Well, in a non-platform model, if you're selling whatever, some kind of SaaS product or doesn't matter, there's only consumers. And so the only thing you're producing whatever your thing is, and there's only one, you only have one knob that you can adjust, and it's the number of consumers. And so people look at platforms and say, oh, well, of course, there's more things that I can do there. There's more people that I can try to take advantage of. You know,
shitification was our other
right,
episode.
That's so. Right. You want to see how platforms go? Go check that one out. But it's a really interesting thing. And you know, it's weird, but you know, I kind of break it down, and there's really kind of a couple of different ways of thinking about platforms. There's business level platforms, and then there's kind of like your internal developer and like platform engineering, like those kinds of platforms. And even still, those are very different, and it's hard to figure out where to even start with some of this.
And what does it even mean? Because even you and I going back and forth have different definitions from years, like you said, years of different definitions put on top of what platform means. And nowadays that word's pretty much in every, kind of like AI, it's pretty much in every article you go search. So everything's a platform. And you know, we're going to talk about that a bit in the show here and try to add some clarity and then help people to think about how do you think in a platform mindset. So you are picking the right things. You're right. When you go to build a platform, you're actually building a platform, you're building a marketplace or something else. Right. And the one example I put in here that I thought was a great place to start was, well, what was it like before we started even thinking about like platforms? Because, you know, I worked a lot of retail, worked for different retail companies. And one of the big examples I saw was you had brick and mortar, you know, shops. And in there, you had your IT handling all of those physical stores. And we turned around, we said, oh, let's do e-commerce. Yeah, put e-commerce out there. Okay, great. We didn't extend out the teams working in the stores. We went and created a whole new team. And then that team owned its own data, and it had its own services, and it had its own, sometimes it had its own PIM system and its own pricing systems, and it had its own, you know, promo. All of a sudden, you're doing different things in a store than e-com. And then mobile came around. So, hey, let's not add that together. Let's create another group. So we create another group. And now we have duplication of everything. We have silos everywhere. Nobody's talking to each other. Nobody's sharing anything, right? It's definitely not a platform.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that I know I've been really, really frustrated with kind of old school kind of retailers, and this has gotten better over the last handful of years, but you know, my reward system is different internal to the store than when I buy stuff online. Or if I buy stuff on the store, it doesn't show up in my online shop. Like I don't know who I am. There's no like continuity across any of that. And, you know, one of the big challenges there, it really is a platform problem. And, you know, if you're, just like you said, if like, okay, well, if we have in-store, then we have online, and then we have mobile, we have all these other things. Well, if you're building all of those completely independent from one another, you're having lots and lots of duplication, lots of energy. You they have the people problem, like I was just talking about, of, you know, how do you identify a human? And right. You know, okay, well, we have these three systems and we think this is the same person over here, over there, but maybe not. And that's hard if you're, you know, it's it takes a different level of strategic thinking than just, you know, oh, here's the problem in front of me, go solve it. Problem in front of me, go solve it. And that's where I think a lot of people fall apart.
Yeah, 100%. And you see that because of the silos. And where I think it's important kind of looking at the silos is because each group starts to try to solve those problems, but still staying in their silos. Yeah. There's no collaboration at an organizational level to start bringing it together. Or there's one project to try to fix the data. Or there's one project to do something else. And this just causes more and more problems. And who's suffering? The customer. The customer suffers because you can't build personalization that's consistent across. I mean, nowadays we're asking people to do AI-based personalization. We haven't even fixed personalization in most of the organizations from the first problem, right? So understanding how to bring this together. I mean, you said it perfectly, right? It's trying to create, because platforms is at a different level. And we keep this where we're saying we're platforms. So this could be my focus on a data platform. And as an organization, am I centralizing out my ability to think from that standpoint? Are these platforms as in providing services that can be consumed and used in a way that I can increase innovation and, competitiveness inside of an organization? Because if it's siloed, it can't be competitive and you're not going to be innovative because you're spending too much time on KLO.
That's right. And for those that don't know KLO, keep the lights on.
Keep the lights on.
But, you know, there's so many things that become very redundant in those silos. Just take something as simple as, like, you know, back to identity management. If you live in a silo and you solve identity management, you don't have to solve it again. You have to solve it again, solve again. So the way that you can think about that differently is, well, you know, forget the silo. Like, maybe you need the silo from an organizational perspective. I mean, you know, there's lots of challenges inside of many organizations that you're never going to get away from. And, you know, that maybe you need an organization around, your brick and mortar and then mobile and whatever. But if you can start to have these cross-cutting platforms and say that, okay, well, here's our identity management platform that is going to use, you know, something like Okta or Auth0 or whatever, it doesn't really matter, but it does all of the things internally to clearly tie and identify a person to a thing. And now all of a sudden you now have a multiplier of, okay, if you want to now build something else that needs identity, great. It's a solved problem. And you can start to now gain efficiencies across your organization without needing to constantly hash through and battle out. How do you identify something?
Yeah, 100%. Right. And there was a book I was reading. I forget the book. Future Ready. That was it. Future Ready was the book. And what I liked is it was talking about going from systems that were, or environments that were spaghetti code, basically the entire environment, not just the software that we were writing, not just the code, but an environment itself. And how do you simplify and start standardizing that and getting it into a state where it's what they were calling future ready, but it was putting together these systems that allowed for supportive innovation and growth. And their idea was to integrate silos, put the right kind of automation, clean your data, make it more efficient, and in the hopes of driving simplification, mm-hmm. right? Because at the end of the day, that is what we want out of this, right? We've been fighting with these problems in organizations we all know forever. We just keep putting different names on, right? But we've done this. But the idea at the end of the day, right, is simplification and getting rid of, like, the complexities of legacy systems or the cost of redundancy.
Yeah. And I think the other part, the other side to that is you can't also over-engineer things, because we see a lot of, well, there's definitely a lot of localized developers that run into the problem of, oh, well, I'm going to try to future-proof my code. It's like, oh, well, maybe they're going to want X, Y, and Z. Maybe they need this. Maybe they need that. And they've built this whole thing that isn't necessarily what people might have been asking for, but it's a thing that, that they've done that they think might help in the future, but might actually hurt it. And so there's a balance that you're having to find of, you know, when is something painful enough to actually start to think about it and refactor it? And, you know, thinking about these from legacy systems, I think is a good way of doing it, because very rarely, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, do we do a lot of greenfield work.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't really happen that much.
Also, we're really good at over-engineering things. We like to over-engineer, yeah, right? We, you know, your point for refactoring is really good, right? We,
you're trying to say I made a good point.
Yeah, cool. We'll put that one on a t-shirt. One of our t-shirts we're going to sell. The idea of refactoring most of the time ends up causing more problems than I think it saves. And everybody will hate me from that, from a technology standpoint, because it always should be making your code better as you're moving forward. But that's a different kind than somebody saying they want to over-design it to future-proof for the edge case that's in the future.
Yeah. Right?
It's easy to overdo it. But if we manage that, if we manage how we're building, if we manage the environment we're using, we can streamline a lot of the processes. We can bring together a lot of the things here. And then we can try to make someone's life better. Because I can't remember my own use cases of my life and say, okay, I remember a time when I had to over-engineer that code and, you know, write all the, and do all that extra work and work late nights and weekends. I can't think of a time when that ever actually helped.
It's impossible to predict the future. And, you know, trying to make these guesses is just, it's a crystal ball that you're going to get wrong the vast majority of the time. We can't even estimate and understand the things that we know about. And we're going to try to now guess the things that we don't know about and then predict for them in the future. There's definitely
Our environment changes too much.
Your business changes too much. Yeah. You know, look at all of us in 2019 and ask us what we were doing in 21 and, you know, 2021. That's always a problem, and there's different levels of it. I mean, you have your code level problems, you have your kind of enterprise architecture kind of problems, and then everything in between. But you need to understand where is the pain coming from, and then figuring out how to abstract that away. And I think that, to me, is the power of platforms, because you can, you can start to, you can use that as a mechanism to do that kind of refactoring. You know, hey, go out into the wild. You want this thing that you want to do. You have this thing that you want to build. Great. Go do it. And if it grows and it grows big enough, now we can think about how do we take and, you know, assimilate that into the broader, kind of ecosystem of software and everything else from the enterprise.
Yeah. At the end of the day, right, any level that we're talking about, platform, we actually, some examples we're going to jump through, but the point really is that we're simplifying processes, we're simplifying operations, right? We're kind of trying to turn things into services, mm-hmm. right? We're trying to turn things into components that then can be used like building blocks, like Legos, right? That now will allow us to innovate better, faster. Right? We don't spend time on the nuts and bolts all the time for that. We actually can go build something. You know, I'm not trying to figure out how to build a tire. I'm trying to figure out how to put the tire on the cars now. I take it next level.
I mean, you know, you got to drive down the road somehow, man. You can't drive on pizzas.
Duct tape. When we think about examples, I mentioned examples. I brought up e-commerce because when I think about my experience and where platforms really started to play from a word standpoint, it was e-commerce, content management systems. It was organizational systems. It was out-of-the-box systems at one point. You know, you're buying IBM, you're buying Oracle, you were doing SAP, you were doing these big, big systems, what they were calling themselves platforms. Mm-hmm. They were providing services and saying, hey, we're a platform because we provide all these services. For example, in the beginning of some of the confusions of misunderstanding what is a platform in this model or in that model, because SAP or me building out an open e-commerce platform are two different things, depending on what they're doing. The word is kind of fluid.
It honestly doesn't mean anything anymore. And that's, 'cause in the end, you know, what is a producer and what is a consumer? And, you know, there's the, you know, if you take Amazon, for example, Amazon doesn't care what gets sold on Amazon. It doesn't care. Like it is truly provided a platform for people that produce things to sell them to people that want to buy them. Like that is the type of platform that I tend to fall into. But there's, you know, other things like airline flights or those types of things where is that a platform? Kind of like you can go and you can search for flights and you can buy them. So, I mean, I guess the airline company is producing the flights, but they're, you know, but the airline company's not necessarily working with Kayak or Expedia or whatever. You're just pulling that information from a set of APIs and then displaying that to customers and then figuring out ways to run that transaction through. Like, is that a platform? Sure. Maybe. I don't know if we, you know, sit here and argue about the intricacies of what is or what isn't a platform, but to me, it just comes down to, you know, how can you simplify and provide value in a way that you can't get without it.
Well, I think I'm going to do a yes and because we agree on a lot of stuff. We can't do it all the time. So where I see, actually, we still agreed, but what I like is, or what I would want to dive into is the fact that what we're talking about is simplification of processes and operations and things, help people do more, get innovation done. The problem is platform is on everything we do. A great example, I think, is a topic you've been talking on at conferences, a topic that you dive into all the time, very much called a platform, and it's a developer experience platform. But then you have the other side of it, and my background too, with a lot of things, is a data platform. So if we're building out data structures, and I'm building out it's basically a central nervous system for your organization and for all the data that's going to support your data, so I'm building out data storage and management and analytics and everything you want to do on top of that, right? That's a platform, but it's a different kind of platform. Yeah. Right. Because you do developer experience, right? And it's not the same format, but it's a platform.
And that's why I don't care how you want to define some of these things. Like it is a holistic solution for you to be able to solve a problem.
So now for people who are listening to us and trying to go through with the same problems that we that started our conversation here, right? That platform is a little of everything. How do we break that apart so people can think about it a little better, can dive into this a little better? So let's say that we're in consulting, the salespeople we work with are listening to our podcast because everyone asks them, you know, I want a smart person that can help me with a platform. Yeah. How do they better know whether we're talking a data platform or developer experience? Or if we think about real world examples, right? Real world examples we were talking about earlier was what Kayak was a version that's not actually a platform, or we have Uber, right? Yeah. Which I think Uber is more of a platform, or YouTube even, right? YouTube, which you post our channel on.
In the end, I would honestly say, who cares? what you actually want to call it, it really comes down to, it's a mindset to me. And, you know, that's the thing that matters, whether you call it a hippo or a lion or a platform or a car. I don't really care. It's, you know, here's a way of being able to systematically think about a problem and be able to provide someone with a very thought out solution to be able to abstract away their problems. And like that's the thing that really matters in the end. And, you know, I've seen so many people get wrapped up in terminology and everything else that it's honestly turned a little agonizing in some ways. Who cares?
Yeah. Right. There's even a new one out there, which is everything is a platform. Isn't that out there too?
Everything,
you know, everything.
And, you know, just as like a quick aside, I spent a lot of time talking about metrics and developer productivity and everything else like that. I've seen a lot of people fall in love with metrics. And it's like, in the end, the metrics don't matter. They don't care. I don't care. You can have all the best metrics in the world, but if your business is failing or you're not providing business impact or any of those things, who cares? Who cares if you have these great metrics? Who cares if you have a great platform, if you can't turn it into anything? And that's why, right, you know, having a really good mindset when it comes to this really is the power. It's not any of the words or any of the other thing around it. It's, you know, so here, like, take an example from like platform engineering, kind of developer experience platforms, whatever the words you want to use, is, you know, as a developer, I should be very concerned about security. Well, security has become a very, very, very complex problem. You've got static code analysis, you've got dynamic code analysis, you've got like CVEs, you've got all of these tests that you need to do. You're going to be tracking like code provenance and all kinds of other things through your development process. Can I understand how all of those work in a very meaningful way? Maybe. But can I understand all of the development that I need to do, the business problems, the business logic, the data, all of these, like everything else? You have such a high level of cognitive load that comes along with doing anything in the software delivery space right now, and it's not getting any better. That's the challenge. And so how can you start to think about that problem and come up with ways of making it better? Well, if you, you know, one of the core kind of just basic tenets of platform engineering is to abstract some of that problem away. So instead of saying, hey, you need to understand how to work with the SonarQube APIs, understand how to parse their report, understand what all of this stuff means, and is it of any importance? No, what you can do is use my simple API that I've created for you that abstracts away the problem. I wrote a bunch of business logic that says, this is the stuff that matters, this is the stuff that doesn't matter. And I can feed you back an easy to read, low cognitive load kind of report back that says, hey, here you go. This is the thing you need to worry about. And guess what? I'm not letting you deploy unless you fix this. But it removes all of that complexity, because that complexity doesn't matter. And for that developer or that team of developers, that is such a huge benefit, because they're getting all of the value without having to truly, you know, dig deep into the code. Can they? Sure. But now you can say, great, I've made this easy for you. You can do your job better, quicker, faster, with a high level of quality. And I now, as an engineering leader, can say that I know that my applications going out are of high quality and as secure as I can make them. Like, that is a platform that provides a ton of value. And the way that I was able to get to that is by having a really good understanding of the problem, what the outcome is that I want, and be able to give people an easy path to drive their way through.
Yeah. A bunch of good things in there. So let me,
sorry, let me step back to one rant there for a second.
That's right. I was just thinking that I could tell that you got 14 hours of sleep.
I'm way better today than I was yesterday.
I'm really jealous, because I would love that energy for the day. You mentioned one thing that I think was really important, which is a T-shaped developer or M-shaped developer, depending which one you use. And the tech stacks and the environments have gotten so complex, it's almost impossible to expect anyone to have the level, the depth and level of experience and knowledge they need to truly set up the right environment. It is a small army to set up these environments. And that's one of the first points you brought up. And I think it's important for people to understand that this is why this journey of building whatever you want to call your platform is important. Like, the first part is figuring out what you build, how you simplify it. And then I think the second part, like you brought up,
was, I thought of onboarding when you said it, but it's building out simplicity in the process. I also thought of the onboarding processes that I run into at all the new clients. It's usually very difficult for them to onboard consultant or new employees or someone else. So even that process is convoluted and it can take months. Like I can remember more than a handful of clients that we ended up helping them to fix their onboarding process first before we even started the project, mm-hmm. because that was one of their biggest pains as a for the technical components inside the organization. And it was smart to make this clean, to make it into a very repeatable and don't make me think kind of process. And then the one other thing at towards the end you mentioned, and it made me think of the legacy systems I work with, and that was just building Legos. So what you're talking about at the end of the day is if I get rid of the word platform, just forget it. What I am building though is reusable components that have clarity and consistency of what they are and why I might use it. Now, they should be flexible enough so I can get creative and try to use them in other ways, but they have a job and a purpose and an outcome. So that's where the innovation part comes in, right? Like if I think about my box of Legos have some custom pieces in there. I know they do X, but I also know they plug into every other block. So I can put them together in a unique way and come up with something that no one's ever thought of. And I'm not spending 3 years doing it with, you know, a bunch of new developers trying to learn an entire new tech stack.
That's right. And, you know, you get, what do most developers enjoy? It's building new stuff and yep. you know, whatever that looked like. Sometimes it's coding. Most of the time it's coding, but
well, it's building, it's creating something.
And yeah. You know, what's also one of the scariest things that you can look at is just a blank screen. It's like, okay, well, I've got to go build stuff and I have zero lines of code written. Where do I begin? And, you know, writing, there's a ton of boilerplate code. There's a ton of stuff that you have to do to get to writing any of the cool stuff. And
well, even to work on a project sometimes, like you bring up a really good example, because years ago when I coded, I could open up like VB6 and I could create a form and it was an event-driven tool. I jump in to some of the events, I'd start writing code and I could build out a tool in an hour for something to solve some problem. Quick, it was easy. I use it all the time to deal with simple things I was building or to build more complex stuff, but it was easy to get in and get started. I don't have the same life now as I did back then as a developer. If I want to work on something today, I got like 20 minutes to try something. And often that 20 minutes ends up me trying to figure out how do I go get the environment, build the environment, configure the environment to even get to the really cool idea that I had maybe.
Well, you know, I mean, you have your code. So you're starting from zero lines of code. You then need to spin up your infrastructure in the cloud. You're then going to need to write some kind of CI pipeline, some kind of CD pipeline. There is an awful lot of stuff that you have to do and a lot of things that you don't do often. And can I write a React app from scratch? Yes. Yes, I could. Do I remember where to start? No. Because I haven't done it in a long time.
Right. It's been a year or 2 years since I played with it. And I know my environment's not there. And I'm not sure how did I write that last time? I did something really cool and I forgot, you know, like
you end up then doing what a lot of people would do is go do some copying and pasting. Oh, well, I did this whole thing over there. I'm going to copy that, throw that into here. I'm going to copy this, throw that into here. That's how you end up with just garbage. And it's, you know, the word that I always like to talk about here is deliberate. You've got to be deliberate. And if you know people are going to be creating new things, then help them. Like, think through it. Hey, architect folk, security folks, all of these people, what are the actual standards that we are holding ourselves to? I know once a year we have the security training that I got to go through and answer 10 dumb questions. But that doesn't actually make us any more secure. What is it that we actually mean when we say these things? And then go give that as a accelerator for people that need it when they need it, or build it into a platform to abstract that complexity away. And that to me is, you know, that is a lot of the root of a lot of these problems, is from a leadership perspective, from a priority perspective, no one ever, there's a reluctance for people and inability to provide a good business case to say that we should be spending our time doing this because this will make us better, faster, quicker. And we felt pain. Like, to go back to what I said earlier, you don't want to just go just building stuff to build stuff. But, you know, hey, we have this old e-commerce headless monolith that I want to get rid of, and we're going to go build it into microservices. Okay, great. Well, maybe you should have a good template for what a microservice should look like. You know,
yeah, thought out ahead of time a little bit with all the things you need, everything from monitoring, measures, scalability, and everything else. Maybe.
Like, you know, here's what the tools might look like. You know, maybe how we're going to deploy them. Like, you should maybe think about some of that kind of stuff if you're going to go through that. And, you know, I'm still surprised sometimes by how many people get caught off guard by some of that. And I, as an example, you know, that was actually a client I was just talking about that had an old headless CMS that was monolith. And one of the things that they honestly didn't realize is most of their developers had never really worked with any CI/CD tools. You have a bunch of old school Java monolith developers. They don't worry about deployments. They don't worry about any of that. And so, you know, did they know Java? Sure. Were we using Java in the microservices? Yeah, absolutely. But when it came to any of the ops side of DevOps, they were basically clueless. And so we were having to teach a bunch of people how to go and do this. And really, in the end, what we should have been doing is, hey, here's a whole platform that you can leverage. Here's a good set of pipelines that you can take and run and own. Here's all the services they connect up to. And it would have saved so much time, so much energy, so much effort. But eventually they did learn, and we did build them a really cool platform, and they're doing very, very well at the current moment.
Excellent. I think you bring up good points of what is then not the definition of platform, but the idea. Because what we're working with realistically here is the concept that people are trying to have with it, right? It's shared infrastructure, shared services. Somewhat don't make me think, right? Make it easier. I did a project once from this standpoint where we had a menu that you could bring up and you could dynamically ask to create environments if you wanted to test out the search server, or you needed an instance of the e-commerce or the CMS, or if you needed something else. And it was all self-service. It was all easy to get to and easy to work with. And I think that's, you know, important, is like, how are we creating these shared environments for simplicity, to at least know we have consistency and control and such.
Every day you wake up with, you know, hopefully your battery charged. Are your batteries charged up to wherever it's going to get charged up to? And, you know, everything that's in your way is going to take away from that battery. And the more frustrating the thing is, the more it's going to take away. And would you rather have your developers focusing their time on solving things that really matter, or writing boilerplate code, or trying to figure out how to write a good, you know, CI pipeline or whatever? Like, where do you want them to actually focus their time? And, you know, that to me is the big thing. It's like, great. Well, I don't want them to be focusing on this because this is hard and it takes a lot of specialty. Great. Let's think about it from a platform perspective.
You and I were working on something the other day, and there was a really good percentage that you had. It was a quote from somebody, and it was like the developers spend a certain amount of time just trying to find
7 hours every week. On average, a developer will spend about 7 hours every week looking for answers to problems.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Not only that, the experts, so the people that have the have the answers will waste about 10 hours of their time looking or answering those kinds of questions. And then the kicker on top of all of that is roughly 40%-ish of those questions are redundant. And so,
right, because it's easier to ask somebody than it is to go look it up. So I'm going to keep asking every time I forget.
You may not even know where to look it up. I mean, you know, if documentation is poor almost everywhere, even if you know where it is, can you trust it? Is it out of date? Is it of anything? And so you're more likely, even if you find the right documentation, best case, you find the right documentation, you probably don't believe it. You're probably still going to send a message to somebody saying like, hey, like, is this really right? And then, you know, it may only be a little small interaction, but, you know, thinking about a couple of episodes ago, talking about flow state and everything else like that, all of a sudden he's answering these little questions can really, really ruin your ability to be able to get a lot done.
Get into a flow state. Yeah.
And
then a whole week goes by, which we've all lived this, right? A whole week goes by. You feel like you got nothing done. You've been busy, crazy busy. And everybody else you've helped and you didn't get in your own stuff and you got nothing done. And now you're working the weekend or at night catching up to what you were doing. And it is, it makes a flow state and the ability to have the right tools and the right environment to do the things you need to do quickly. Right. Yeah. The other one I think is really great is standardization and governance overall. Like we talk about consistencies of templates and reuse and things like that. Also standardization, whether it's code standardization, security practices, right? Consistency and documentation, how we do it, where to find it, you know, how to use it, how does it get updated, communication protocols and practices, things like that.
Well, you know, I always like to pick on kind of documentation just because it sucks everywhere, but there's three major problems when it comes to knowledge management. There's documenting tools and services and those types of things. There's documenting business processes and organizations and those types of things. And there's answering questions. Well, each of those requires a different platform. And what we try to do is say, well, you know, one size fits all. Haha, here we go. We got Confluence. It'll solve all of our problems. Well, that actually works pretty good for doing your kind of business process, but it does really bad at documenting services and those types of things. And, you know, that's where documentation as code tools really come in. It's like, I can write my documentation, sits alongside of my code. And when I deploy my code, I deploy new documentation. Well, you know, in the Confluence model, I need to have this other document that has my documentation in it. Then whenever I release my code, then I need to go take and copy and paste this into right Confluence pages. Maybe is that going to happen? Maybe but probably not sometimes.
Probably and, not.
You know, things will get missed. Things will get everything else. Like with the right process, you can force anything to work, but that's why a lot of, you know, those tools don't work well when it comes to trying to define software. It's just not designed for it.
I think you make me think of something that I think is very valid here, and it's effective. We have so many tools that we're trying to use to solve problems, and the tools don't interconnect well enough, and you're redundant in certain practices and processes, and people don't do it because it's just too much. And I got to get back to my day job. I got to go actually write some code. I got to do something, or I got to work on something, right? I think there's a misunderstanding maybe between tool sets and platforms. That platforms are bringing together consistency and standardization, like we said, across tool sets and practices maybe and principles that we're following. And it's to simplify a whole process. It's not one tool. It's normally not one tool that does it, but it's an agreement to use X number of something over a certain set of processes. Because there was another really, you said a lot of important, you know, smart things today. There was another thing you had mentioned, which I think we haven't touched on that we should. That is, when we say platform for any of the things we're talking about, it's not one. It's a layering of different. It's another level of Lego blocks. right? A successful environment is actually a bunch of these small platforms that are plugged together in a way that they create a larger, you know, a very clean and organized ecosystem.
Well, it's almost like you're talking about enterprise architecture and solution architecture. Kind of weird.
I don't know. That could be another episode.
It could be. And I think it's very bizarre how a lot of that's gotten tossed out the window over the last handful of years.
True.
Like, you know, enterprise architecture is still kind of a thing, but a lot of solution architecture in those, like, oh yeah, the teams will just figure it out. Like, really? Will they?
Yep. But it's a big difference between the two, to your point, because enterprise architecture is business focused. And most organizations think it's still just technology focused, as if they were solutions architect. And there is a big difference. And there's a different way of thinking about all the problems that gets lost.
Because right. if you know, what you just said about, you know, platforms and thinking about, I like to think about that as just, what are your engineering capabilities? And, you know, what do you want to call that? Like solution architecture, enterprise architecture? I don't care. But what are the things that you're actually doing? And if you were to create a menu of stuff that your engineering organization can handle, what would it be? And in a lot of organizations, it's what, I don't have one because we have a million of them. Every team does something different. Well, you know, if you think about it from a platform perspective, it's okay. Well, I have an identity management solution, platform, tool, service, whatever hell word we want to use. I don't care, but you were deliberate in how you thought about it, how you designed it, and how it gets rolled out. And you reduce levels of fragmentation across your ecosystem that says, okay, well, this is the way that we do this. If somebody else wants to do it differently, well, here's a process for being able to think about it and come up with the right answer. And you now have the ability to let people focus in on the impact to the business. And like I said earlier, right, about the metrics, outcomes. People fall in love with metrics. The same problem happens here. In the end, we're not building stuff just to build stuff. We're building stuff to improve the overall business and to drive that forward. And the way to do that is through levels of simplification. I know there's an awful lot of people that will scream about like anarchist levels of autonomy. Like, I'm not trying to tell you how to do everything, but what I am telling you is this is a secure way of doing identity, and this is how we're going to do it. I don't care what library you use in Java to sort a list. I don't care. But this is the way we're doing identity management.
There's a fine line between autonomy and anarchy. Right. It's, you know, it's not that different. They're a really good model of having autonomous teams, but having, like you said, an enterprise architecture level or the solutions group or whoever's going to do it. But you're creating governance that puts guardrails up that says, this is how we're generally working in all of these spaces. And you have autonomy to use this platform and these platforms and this ecosystem to go get this done. And if you have a one-off that doesn't fit any of this, then we'll all talk about it and we'll figure out if it makes sense to do it as an organization. But otherwise, you're working in this giant sandbox. But it's still a sandbox. I can build a castle. I can build a truck. I can bring my Tonka trucks in with me and make a mess. Yeah. I can do whatever I want, but it's in the sandbox. So I still have autonomy. Move and do what I need to do to solve problems.
Well, and Threads is a really good example of this. And, you know, they built Threads, I think, in like 3 months or something like that. And which is pretty crazy if you think about it. But the way that they were actually able to do it is because they have a bunch of really great platforms that they've built inside of Meta, where they didn't have to build a login system. They leveraged the back end of Instagram. They didn't have to build a infrastructure platform. They already have a really great platform engineering. But look, here we can deploy these things really fast. They can scale really fast. They can do all the things that we need. And instead of spending all of their time trying to build these back-end systems, they spent the whole time building a front-end system and then leveraging these back-end platforms. And that's the value that it's really hard to get away from.
And the speed, the consistency, the reusability, even your personal information. They know who you are already because we're connecting to the systems that already have your personal profiles. Yeah. There's so many things that you can leverage and benefit from.
It's even better for the end user because,
you know, 100%.
Oh, well, I log into Instagram. Great. I can now log into Threads. Not that I ever log into either one of them, but still, I can't.
if I wanted to,
I could technically.
That is awesome.
Go ahead.
I was just going to think about the last piece I had on my list here, which was the, you know, empowering the teams as you're already talking around, and then just general self-service. Yeah. Because I think it's important in here that it becomes, like you said, the autonomous side of it. There's really a self-service side mm-hmm. of it. Like it's creating things that are easy to use, easy to understand, and allow people mm-hmm. to move forward, again, removing friction and us being able to create an environment that does, like you just said, that's what made me think of it again, right? Is they created this new product. I'm sure all the teams in there didn't have to spend hours and hours and hours of time in meetings to try to understand every other system they were going to connect into. It was most likely a clean set of APIs or some other functionality that was provided inside the system itself for them to extend.
That's right. And it became very easy. And the, you know, self-service is the way to do that. You don't, you know, if you're building out a good platform or tool or service, you shouldn't need me. You should be able to interact with it, do the things that you need to do without me. And that's when you know you've kind of done it right, because that gives levels of autonomy. I'm not some kind of gatekeeper. This is the thing that I provide. And, you know, it just works.
Right. Yeah. Once you've built it, if you've done it correctly, you can have a consumer base. You're the producer of these services, of these products, and you're able to put them out there, and you allow the next group of producers to grab what you've created and then go produce what they're going to produce. And they shouldn't have to ask you. It should be intuitive enough to kind of leverage.
And you have contracts that you can, you know, here's data contracts, here's all these other things. And all of a sudden,
we have so many practices and principles to help us do it the right way. You just have to actually follow them. Yeah.
That's it. All you have to do is just create rules and then follow them. It's almost that simple. But it's the creating the rules that people get real wrapped up. And when I see people, I know I've kind of mentioned this already, but that where I see people struggle with all of this, you know, kind of platform type thinking is they feel like they don't have time. They, you know, just everything's too big. I got to get this done. I got to get that. They just can't seem to just get their head above water and take a step back and go, look, the only way that I'm going to stop this chaos is to rethink how we're actually going. And, you know, if you're running on a treadmill and you're just sprinting on this treadmill, you can only do that for so long. And it doesn't matter how many more people you have sprinting on treadmills. They're going to get tired. The only way to truly solve some of that rat race problem is by making the problem go away. And the way that you can do that is through simplification, using these platforms and providing that level of stuff out to people. That's just it.
Yeah, there was a quote, I forget who said it, but you know, Peter Senge's book, Fifth Discipline, it says, I had to look it up. It says faster is slower, right? It was that thing that I was thinking it the other way, right? But it's like go slow to go fast.
Yeah.
There's a quote from somebody on that, but the premise is logical, right? You remember who said that?
No, but I think it's a book. Yeah.
I think it's out of a book, right? Yeah. But the premise I think is important. It's you know, we have to slow down to speed up. So sometimes you got to look at the environment and the problems you're having and say, what can I clean up? What can I automate? What can I do to do X that will end up helping everyone to actually move forward with a little bit of sanity? Because you're right. If you're stressed, if you're overworking, if you're angry at what you're working on, if you feel like you're fighting with your tools all the time, for example, that stress is going to keep a team from being as productive as you'd like. You're not going to get the quality you want out of a team. You're not going to have a happy team, which means you're not going to have a happy solution. You know, there's a lot of downfalls. People quit, cultures fall apart, and it can all come down to small things that sometimes are very easy to fix. Not simple, but easy to fix. You know?
That's right.
Clarity is important.
That's right. And, you know, if you can start to make that value case, then you'll be better. And you just need to do it.
Yeah. So I guess we say that platforms is not a real word based off this discussion. it's a what would it be? It would be like an adjective, I guess. Right? We're just adding
it's
it on. Just,
it's one of the many words inside of the English language that have become absolutely useless.
Yeah, it's just an extra.
It's the thing in the it's the thing that, you know, we can try to use as a beacon to say that's the stuff that I want to do and use it as a guideline. But, you know, to say that, oh, I have this platform or that platform, who cares? It's all about, you know, providing a good, you know, developer experience. It's providing business value. And it's by simplifying the way that you can go about doing it. And if you have that kind of mindset and, you know, ability to drive continuous improvement, then you're, you know, it might take a few years, but you're going to become an elite organization. That's how you do it. It's not through brute force. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah. 100%. I think it's a logical understanding that if you want to use the word platform and you want to understand what platforms are, because they can be different things, at the end of the day, it's something that allows users to create value that others can consume the value. That could be everything from the small service to a larger system, but it's that. It's not just pushing products out like a marketplace or a retailer would do, right? I'm creating a product and pushing that product out. Marketplace is never a platform. A marketplace is a marketplace. Like, they're different things. So when you think about what you want to name a platform and understand the definition and the design of it underneath, it's something that allows me to create components or services that provide value out to someone else to take and then use to go and create other value.
Couldn't agree more.
Very cool.
Love it.
I'm glad you were feeling better, my friend. This was a good conversation.
It's always fun, always enjoyable. You know, more to come.
Yes, very much so.
Next time, man.
Excellent. Excellent. Cheers. You.